like to welcome you to the Harrison Harris Wealth Heels of Success podcast series. My name is Zanilia Harris, certified financial planner, member of the CNBC Financial Advisor Council, and president of Harrison Harris Wealth Management Group, a firm focused on the financial success of professional women who are going through various life transitions, such as job change, marriage, widowhood, or retirement. The Heels of Success podcast series highlights dynamic and powerful women of influence whose stories I feel should be shared to motivate, encourage, and enlighten women executives and women business owners so they can make healthier professional and financial decisions. My guest today is Dr. Nicole Cutts. She is a success coach, a licensed clinical psychologist, former radio show producer, yogi, artist, and author of the Heron's Quest novel, The Adventures of Isabel, Book 1, and due out this summer, Book 2, The Journey to Orphalese. She empowers women to find their life's work and unleash their true potential through exercises like the success model of visioning and tools like vision boards and creating success plans with timelines. Your personal breakthrough is closer than you think. Encounters with Nicole will help you come away with greater clarity about your life's work and the motivation to achieve your vision of success. She has over 20 years of experience inspiring and empowering people and women to achieve a more balanced and successful lifestyle. And as a master facilitator, executive coach, keynote speaker, she has consulted with and trained executives and managers, teams at Fortune 500 companies, federal government agencies, and nonprofit organizations. She has appeared on BET's The Center, the British Broadcasting Corporation, the Steve Harvey Morning Show, the Daily Drum, Roland S. Martin's Urban Business Roundtable, and various radio and TV programs. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you, Zanilia. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. So I want to just jump into this and kind of get a little bit of information about you and your why. What prompted you to actually pursue becoming a psychologist?
Well, I got into clinical psychology when I was an undergraduate at Howard University. What happened really is that, we are all pretty much required to take Psychology 101, and I was just fascinated by the study of the human mind and the brain, and, so I just really fell in love with it, and it carried me through to going to graduate school to pursue my PhD. And then a funny thing happened in the fourth year of my five-year program, where I sort of fell out of love with clinical psychology. And it was really just sort of the idea of staying in the world where there was so much focus on psychopathology. And I started to think that maybe there was something else, you know, that might be related, but that I was more passionate about. And so I went on a search to find, I completed my program because I'm very practical, and I was in the fourth year of a five-year program. So I completed my PhD in clinical psychology, and I came out, and I was working in the field a little bit, you know, just to support myself, but I also went on a journey to find, in those days I used to call it my passion, you know, what is it that I'm passionate about now, because I had kind of fallen out of love with clinical psychology. And through a circuitous route that took me back to my art, I had always painted, it took me back to picking up my art and selling that and, you know, engaging in the art field, but I knew that I didn't want to be solely a professional artist.
Okay.
But I had always liked the idea of teaching and working with groups and organizations, and I had experience working with organizations and groups. And when I was in my internship, one of my internships at a college in L.A., I had created a lot of workshops on success tools, and that was just something that I took the initiative to do. And so, you know, through this process of searching for my, what I now call vision, Mm-hmm. It became very clear to me that I wanted to work with people in organizations. And one of the reasons why is because I feel that our work is very important and that we should be passionate about our work and we should be happy in the work that we do. That work should not just be some place that you go for 8 hours a day where you slave away and suffer.
Right.
And so I started working with people in organizations. That's when I formed Cuts Consulting.
Okay.
With a focus on well-being in organizations psychologically, as well as physically. And then that led me even further to what I'm most passionate about, which is coaching women to go through the process that I went through, which is the process of discovering and living their vision of success. What is it that they're most passionate about? And that's the work that I now do through Vision Quest Retreats. I still maintain my consulting practice working with people in organizations,
mm-hmm.
and I work with women to help them to clarify and achieve their visions of success for their life's work through Vision Quest Retreats.
Okay. Wow. You're so talented.
Thank you. So are you.
As I shared with you earlier, I'm in awe of you because I follow you on Facebook because I love that I feel like you're living your best life and you're showing us through your journey on Facebook, and I think that that's really powerful.
Thank you.
Well, you know, with everything that's going on this week with the recent death of fashion designer Kate Spade, and I have since learned of Anthony Bourdain's death, talk to us a little bit about some of the issues that successful women face that can be, can overcome us to mm-hmm. get to that point that we feel like we want to give up.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think, you know, it's important to note that, you know, you talk about following my journey on Facebook. And, you know, I'm not going to post on Facebook when I'm sleeping late or bummed out or just ate a whole pizza or anything like that, right?
Right.
I'm just going to
mm-hmm.
post the good stuff. And it's not as if I'm posting that and I'm miserable behind the scenes, but I'm just saying it's important for us to know that, you know, what we see, what people put out there, we can't compare our insides to people's outsides, right? That's
mm-hmm.
number one. Number two, there are a lot of pressures on women to succeed, and it's hard, and it's especially hard if you do suffer from a mental health issue or a mental illness like depression or anxiety or bipolar disorder, you know, all things that can lead people to committing suicide. Sometimes people mistakenly think that depression is just a feeling. It's just an emotion. It's something that people who don't have depression can't necessarily relate to it. And there are a lot of people and women out here who might be very successful and working really hard, but they're working through this depression.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult. There are a lot of very successful people that you don't know they're depressed, and they're working almost triply harder than other people because they have to work through this depression, which can be like slogging through concrete.
Right.
So there's a difference between being anxious, feeling down, and actually being diagnosed with depression and anxiety. But all of that is real. So it is important for us and for women who are, trying to live our best lives to take care of all aspects of who we are, right? So our mind, our body, our spirit, all of that. And you have to take care of your, the same way that if you have a toothache, you're going to go to the doctor, to the dentist and get it checked out, or, you know, whatever it is, we get our screenings. If you are feeling that your anxiety, depression, or any other feelings or emotions are impeding your ability to be happy, to be satisfied, to, you know, to get up every day, to do your work, whatever it is, there's not only is there no harm, but there can be a great help to you to at least go and have a consultation and see what's going on. And aside from that, you should just be engaging in activities to support your mental health. You know, having time off, spending time with family and friends, getting physical exercise. You know, that's good for your body and for your mind.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, it's a lot of pressure, but we have to keep in mind what's most important. And if you are chasing after this vision of success, thinking that that is going to make you happy, that's a mistake.
Okay. Well, talk about that, you know, chasing after success, and with that comes the whole money conversation, because a
yes.
lot of people correlate success with having a lot of money, and both
right.
of these two individuals, you know, according to what we know about them, they
yeah.
did have, you know, the money as well as, you know, this level of success in their industries,
yeah.
but yet, you know, they were overcome with, you know, whatever was in their life, whether it was depression or some other mental disorder that
mm-hmm.
led them down this path. So
yeah.
How does money tie into, you know, our feelings of hopelessness, or can affect our feelings of hopelessness? And, you know, what are some of the things that we can do to combat that, or peel away the layers to kind of understand it?
Mm-hmm. Good. That's a good question. And I'm glad that you, as a financial planner and advisor, you know, are aware of the psychological aspects of money. And it's very complex, you know. Our relationship with money is an important one. And I think the first step is, in anything, is awareness. You know, is being aware of what is it that you ascribe to having money. Does your definition of success only include having money?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and as you know, people have all sorts of different relationships with money. And what you're striving for is a healthy relationship with
right.
money.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So where you're not addicted to it, but nor are you, let's say, averse to it and pushing it away from you.
Right.
You know, there's some people who I'm sure you've encountered or worked with who say that they want to be able to save or to reach a certain level of financial success, and yet chronically in their lives they've done stuff that has produced the opposite effect.
Mm-hmm.
And if they examine it, and if you examine it with them, or they examine it with another professional, they might find that they have a feeling about money that there's something wrong with it,
right.
or that it's bad.
Yes.
On the converse side, you have some people who think that money truly does buy happiness. And they think that if I am just to have more money, that I can be, if I'm not happy now,
right.
if I have money, I will be happy.
Yes.
Right? And the fact of the matter is that that's just not true. Now, it is true that having money to a certain extent does contribute to our happiness quotient. And the reason being is because it relieves us of a lot of stressors. If your basic needs are met, if you can eat, if you can have a roof over your head, if you can have some relative freedom and time off, if you feel prepared for emergencies,
mm-hmm.
if you can, you know, get things that your children need, take vacations, those things, that does help you to contribute to your happiness. But the mistake people make is thinking that the more money you have, the happier you'll be. And they've actually done studies to show that that actually stops, that you reach a point of diminishing returns, where past having a certain amount of money, once those needs are met, money does not contribute to any more happiness.
Okay.
Right? And so, unfortunately, sometimes people ignore how they really feel inside and think that anything external is going to make them feel better, whether it be fame or money or, you know, a relationship,
right.
whatever it is. And what people find, you know, and I'm sure some people who are listening to your program have found, is that after they become accustomed to that thing, it no longer, quote-unquote, makes them happy. And they feel the same way they did. So I think that it's very important to be building up your insides and just how you feel about yourself at the same time that you're working toward whatever your success or your vision of success is. And for me, the definition of vision of success, when I talk about helping women to clarify and achieve that, their vision of success, I do say specifically for their life's work, it does include money in terms of the goal is to be able to support yourself and live comfortably if that's what you want. You know,
right.
Nobody wants to live uncomfortably, but I mean be wealthy if that's what you want, but doing work that you love.
Right. Yeah, because it's funny that you said it because I was going to ask you what was your equation for, you know, a successful lifestyle. And I feel that, and I'm asking that question because it doesn't end with the equation, because I think with each factor of the equation, you're striving for some, to get to some other, you know, a higher level in it the longer you live.
Right, and I agree with you.
Okay. But I wanted to start off with, you know, what would you, you know, what do you, when you create that equation of, you know, your vision of success, what does that entail?
So for me, the components of the vision of success, and I'm talking specifically about work. That's my focus.
Okay.
That's why I'm not a life coach. Sometimes people say, oh, you're a life coach. No, I'm a success coach, and my focus is on helping you to be matched up with the work that makes you the happiest, that you're most passionate about and good at, you know, and that will sustain you, that you can make a living off of. But a part of my definition includes that it can't just be for self. And this goes to my paradigm that I use in my success coaching of us being on the heroine's quest. That our lives are a quest, you know, and this is based off of, I'm not going to go too deep into this, but it's based off of Joseph Campbell is one of the main people who's talked about this idea of the hero's journey or the monomyth that, and you see it in all stories, like you see it in Star Wars, you see it in The Wizard of Oz, but I think that it really helps us as women to see our lives as being on a heroine's quest. And the quest is for, now it's different for different people, but the main thing that you're striving for is whatever your vision of success is. And for me, a big part of that definition, once the heroine reaches her goal, you know, once you win your boon, whether it be open your business or become, you know, CEO of this company or whatever it is, you have to then share that with other people. It cannot just be my definition of success and one's vision of success cannot just be for yourself. I'm not interested in working with people who are like, I just want to be rich or I just want to be famous. Why?
So
a big part of the definition has to include that it benefits the world and other people in the world.
I like that.
Yeah.
And it's true. I'm thinking of some of the things that Oprah has quoted about, you know, that the biggest blessings you get is giving to other people.
Yeah.
And you receive so much more from that. And I think it's beyond just, you know, that immediate, it feels good to give
right.
to someone else. But it's deeper than that because you're connecting to someone else. You're seeing that your purpose is bigger than you. And, you know, and that those two things are powerful within itself. So I like that you're saying that, you know, that what your life's work should be purposeful and should be, you should have a passion around it, but it also should be giving something back to the universe for it to get, you know, so it's kind of like this reciprocal relationship.
Yes.
You know, the universe gives to you, but yet you also giving it back in the work that you're doing.
Yes.
Am I understanding what you're saying correctly?
You are.
Okay.
You're understanding
perfectly.
And the thing is that that's when you feel fulfillment, like what you just said, having a purpose, having a mission, that is what gives your life meaning. The acquisition of the money or the trophies or the awards or the recognition
is not what gives your life meaning. Now, I'm not saying that those things don't bring pleasure, because they do. And it's
right.
Okay to be achievement-oriented. And it is. We also feel good when we set goals and are working toward them and when we achieve them, right?
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
the problem a lot of people make is that they pin all of their happiness and satisfaction on the achievement of these things, and then they're sadly disappointed when they achieve it. They get a temporary bump, and then they're right back where they were.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
And we see this with people all the time, you know.
Well, so define, I want to go back to the whole discussion about depression.
Mm-hmm.
So can you define depression?
Yes.
Further? I think you gave some you gave some examples of how it affects you.
Mm-hmm.
But I want a true definition for, you know, for people to understand, like, this is, you know, a feeling that I'm feeling for those who it's just like it could be a, you know, something that they're going through right now, and then for others who it is actually a disorder that mm-hmm. needs medical attention.
Okay. Yes. Yes. So what you said is exactly right, that it can be a feeling and it can reach what would be considered a diagnosable level where it is considered a mental illness. Okay. And
okay.
One of the first things I think people have to understand is that depression does not have to be caused by any external circumstances.
Okay.
And the reason why that's so important is because that is one of the ways that people do a real disservice to people who are depressed. When you start to try to say to people, I'm really feeling down or depressed, oftentimes people will say, but you shouldn't be. You have a family. You have two cars in the garage. You have a nice job, whatever it is. That's because they don't understand that depression is not dependent at all on the circumstances in your life. It's a feeling that's going on inside of you. It's an actual physical, has physical manifestations. For example, being very low energy, slowed down, it affects your appetite, it affects your sleep. You might sleep more. You might have early morning wakefulness. You might not want to eat, or you might be overeating.
Right.
It also affects your cognition or your thinking. It can slow your thinking down so that you're not thinking clearly and effectively, so it makes life very difficult because your brain, it's like some people describe it as, you know, moving through concrete, like wet concrete, or for their brains, like they just feel cut off from the world. Anhedonia is another symptom, which just means like having a lack of pleasure in activities.
Okay.
So somebody who's experiencing depression who might have formerly loved to go out to parties or loved to play tennis or watch movies will experience that these things that formerly gave them pleasure no longer do. And that's because they're having a lack of feeling toward anything.
Okay.
You know, so it's some, for some people they're very numb. The other way that it affects your cognitions is that people who have depression will have a certain type of thinking, very negative thinking, very hopeless thinking. So they might think, nobody likes me. I'm a failure. I'm a terrible person. And these thoughts can become ruminative. You know, they can go around and around in their head, and they cannot just snap out of it.
Okay.
So people will say, well, you know, that's not true. That's not rational. Just don't think like that.
Right. Yeah, no, you hear that a lot. Yeah,
yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, you shouldn't think like that. You should just think positively. Well, positive thinking, even if you force your mind to have a positive thought, that is not going to eliminate depression. Now, I am not saying that at some milder levels, because you also, when you diagnose somebody with depression, there's, you know, mild, moderate, and severe depression.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So somebody who is either mildly depressed or who is not really diagnosably depressed, but just feeling depressed or feeling down, yes, positive thinking, exercise, there are a lot of things that can help to boost your mood, but it's like only to an extent. You know,
okay.
So there are certain things, for example, if you're diabetic, eating a certain way can help to maintain and stabilize your blood sugar levels, right?
Right.
And yet, you also, sometimes people need medication.
Medication, right, yes.
you know, so there's sometimes, you know, you might go to the doctor and he says you have high cholesterol, just cut down on your fat content and da-da-da and exercise more. Okay, great. There are some people who are doing that and they still need to take a medicine to lower their cholesterol.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying don't try any of those things, but if you're doing that and you're still depressed or it just gives you this little temporary bump and you're still trying to slog through, then you should go and have a consultation. It never hurts to have a consultation with a licensed psychiatrist, psychologist, or licensed clinical social worker. You know, and that was the other thing that I've noticed from a lot of people that I've worked with and just friends or people in general. They might be getting antidepressant, or we also need to talk about anxiety, but anti-anxiety medications from their general practitioners or their internists. You really should have a consultation with a psychiatrist and with a licensed psychologist or social worker who can help to diagnose if you have depression, anxiety, or bipolar disorder, which is a combination of, you know, bipolar is, you know, having mood, not swings, but you have a combination of depressive and manic episodes.
Okay.
You know, so people might also, we talk a lot about depression, but people also experience mania, where their thoughts and their actions and everything is very sped up.
Okay.
And some people actually like that feeling for obvious reasons.
Yes.
But that can, when mania reaches a certain level, can actually lead to psychosis.
Okay.
So,
wow.
You know, again, varying levels. So if you
right.
have, let's say, bipolar disorder of 2, that variety, which has some depressive episodes and some manic episodes, but it doesn't actually, excuse me, I want to correct myself. You don't have manic episodes, you have hypomanic episodes. So they're lesser manic episodes. So that might be, you feel a lot of energy and I'm ready to go and I've got some ideas and no, I don't need to sleep and I'm going to clean my house. And people like feeling like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem
it's
is.
The energy behind it, you know.
Right, but it goes on too long. You start to feel irritable, you don't sleep, you become exhausted, and it can get to the level, like if it goes higher, can lead to psychotic thinking, you know,
okay.
being delusional, actually hallucinating when you get to a certain level of mania. So it can be very hard to treat, but all of this is very real, and I think that that's probably the most important thing for people to understand, is that it really is a disorder that is based in what is going on chemically in
yes.
one's brain and body, and sometimes structurally in their brains.
Right.
And that's why they've found that they're all different types of medication that can be very helpful. And people also have a big stigma and a problem with medication. I can't tell you the amount of clients I've had that I've said to them, you know, it really seems like what you are dealing with is depression.
Right.
You know, going on for a long time. You get a temporary bump, you go back down. I really think you should have a consultation with a psychiatrist. No, I don't want to take medicine.
Wow.
Okay. Why? Because I don't believe in drugs. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But a lot of those very same people, like, for example, I have a thyroid condition. You know, I have to take synthetic thyroid
yes.
hormone every
yes.
day. And, incidentally, I do have depression. You know, and so I take an antidepressant medication, you know, and for a long time, even as once I became a psychologist, I wanted to say the same things that other people have said. Oh, it's not really a disorder, you know,
right,
not for
right.
me. Now, for you, yes, but not really for me. You
right.
know, I can, there's this trick with depression and anxiety sometimes of like, no, I'm sure if I just try hard enough, if I exercise enough, if I this enough, if I da da. Anyway, what I found over, you know, years of saying that, trying that, was that it wasn't working,
right.
you know, and
yeah.
that medication does work, and that combined with therapy, combined with getting exercise, combined with eating properly.
Right.
You know, all of those things are helpful. And I can attest, this is just my experience, and I know the experience of many people, the times when I have come off of it for various reasons, sometimes, you know, saying, again, you know, I don't really want to be on this, so I'm just going to stop taking it. Azanelia, I found every time within about 3 months,
mm-hmm.
I would be literally, like, on the ground.
Wow.
Literally. Like,
wow.
Like, for a call like this, I might be, well, first of all, I wouldn't be this up, but
okay.
I would literally be, like, have the phone on the ground next to me, just,
wow.
like, to just get through.
Yeah.
You know? And people, there are people who just keep going through that, and unfortunately, sometimes they can't deal with it anymore.
Right.
And we see things like where they take their lives, right?
Yeah. And,
but
yeah,
we also know that a lot of times people who do commit suicide are getting help. They are getting treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a surefire guarantee that they won't commit suicide.
Right.
But it certainly, of course, helps because they're
right.
in somebody's care.
Yeah.
But there are some people who have gone through several bouts of depression that get exhausted and they get tired of it. And
yeah.
they, or medication might not be working for them. You know, there are all kind of reasons. And the thing is that people who don't experience it really can't understand, you know,
right.
because one of the crowning symptoms of depression is in around the thinking is hopelessness.
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
you don't have any hope, you can't say, this will pass, I'll be okay.
Right. Well, you know, a couple of things that, you know, that I want to, you know, bring up, and I think I'm going to bring it up in regards to the whole money mindset concept.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to switch gears a little bit and kind of talk
okay.
about, you know, the whole idea about the emotions around money and because you mentioned it that for some, you know, it makes you feel good when you have it, you know,
mm-hmm.
or you're striving to get it, and you know, and then when you have it, it's like this whole push is like, I just, you know, I want more and more and more, which I think also is a selfish perspective.
Yeah.
And then the flip side to that is, you know, because of I'm just going to tie it to me personally,
mm-hmm.
How I grew up, you know, I didn't have everything that I wanted, but
mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like I couldn't get what I wanted.
Right.
you
right.
know,
mm-hmm.
but you know, when you compare yourself to other people, you're like, oh my God, I kind of didn't have a lot of stuff because
mm-hmm.
you're doing this whole comparison thing. But
right.
the things that happen to you, experiences that you have, or the way that you grew up can affect your mindset around
oh, yeah.
money. So, you know, what are some tips? And I'm going to go on the side of, you know, if you have a negative mindset around money.
Okay.
What are some tips to get you through it so that you can, you know, kind of move towards having a healthier relationship?
Okay. Well, again, I think the most important thing to start with is the awareness. So,
okay.
Everybody needs to ask themselves, what are my experiences, feelings, thoughts, and stories that I have attached to money?
Okay.
You know, do I feel I have enough? Why or why not? What do I think having money would, what does it mean to me, right? And again,
mm-hmm.
it's about that relationship with it. So, for example, somebody who grows up maybe, let's say, not having money. Okay, and you can have a negative relationship with money growing up with it or without it.
Right, exactly.
You know, but let's say there's somebody who grew up without it and felt that lack, felt that deprivation, okay, and were constantly comparing themselves to other people. And maybe it helped to make them not feel good about themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what they might, the story with them and money is, if I have money, then I'll have self-esteem.
Mm.
Right now, my
wow.
self-esteem is lacking because I don't
okay.
have money, so I need to get money, and I'll be fine. And they will probably find that that is not what's going to determine your self-esteem. Not saying don't work hard, don't earn money, don't get comfortable, but really look at why am I thinking that my worth as a human is attached to this?
Right.
Right? Because obviously it's not. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with that. So what I would suggest to somebody like that would be build up your self-esteem, and it's, you know, complicated how to do that, but there are definitely ways. Build up your self-esteem at the same time that you're building up your bank account. Don't think that the bank account will do it.
Okay.
You know.
I like that.
And also look at, you know, like a lot of things, we're socialized by our parents. What messages did you get around money?
Right.
You know, a lot of times we inherit the meaning of money from our parents, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the name of the book by Suzy Orman, but there's one of her books where she has an exercise where she gets people to look at what are their stories about money. And she talked about, I think it was her story, growing up in a Midwest or a rural community, and they had a country store.
Yes.
And there was a fire.
I can relate.
And, I'm sorry, what did you say?
No, I can relate to the whole country store.
Okay. And there was a fire, and she said, I mean, it was serious, like burning the store, and a very serious fire. And she remembered her father picking up the chrome cash register to carry it out, and it, you know, seared his arms. Right?
Wow.
You know, and the message, you know, and you can interpret, a child or a young person can interpret that all sorts of ways, but she saw that as that was more important than his life or his safety.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so looking at messages that you got from your parents, on the other side, there are people who have grown up having a lot of money and having shame about it.
Yes.
And that they sort of deny or don't want people to know, not because they're being discreet, but because they feel some shame or guilt about it. Okay.
Hmm.
So that's also going to work against you.
Right.
You know, there are some people who are chronic under-earners because they have a story that says, I'm not good enough and I don't deserve to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kind of stories that people have that they might not even be aware of. So the first thing is to look at, and is it working for you? Does this story work for you?
Yes.
And in terms of the relationship with money, the best relationships are just healthy ones where, yes, I'm in the relationship with you. I understand the use of you, you know, and what it can do for my life. But you can't, if you're thinking that I'm going to die if I don't have more, that's not a healthy relationship.
Right.
You know, and if you're pushing it away, you know, selling yourself short or purposely not taking certain work or because you somehow might be stuck in a cycle where you like the, and like I say, just meaning you've gotten used to it, like this idea of I like striving more than having.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always, that can also be self-defeating. So, you know, it's very individually dependent, but definitely take a look at it. How do I feel about money? Do I think that money's the end-all be-all that's going to make me happy? Do I recognize that it's something that I need and that I can use? And am I happy in relation to it?
Right. So can you, so then do you feel that you can retrain your brain around your thoughts or your the messaging around the money? So if you have, you know, in either case, you had money and there's this negative connotation that you attached to money, or you didn't have it and it's one because of lack, can you retrain your brain? I feel like the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Retrain your brain in order to be in a healthier relationship. And is there like one tip or two tips where people can, you know, start to do that? So if I guess the one tip that you gave is that, you know, write down what your money story is. You know, what will be, you know, two more tips, I guess, that once they do that, should they do that work? Should they do that work? Because some financial financial planners may find themselves trying to help guide their clients through this.
Yes.
And, you know, by having them to share the story and to unpeel that story and, to, you know, and you need to be in a safe space for that, to, you know, creating a safe space for them to unpeel their whole relationship around money. And, I feel that it should be in connection with working with a therapist as well. But, you know, how do you know when, as a financial planner, when that next step is necessary?
That's a hard question. The second part of your question is a hard question to answer. I'll start with the first part of some tips.
Okay.
If you choose to write down your current story, one fairly simple thing to do is to rewrite that story. Write your healthy story.
Okay.
You know,
like
what do you want your relationship with money to look like and be? So if my story is, let's say, for example, because here's another story. I have a friend who I know who he grew up in El Salvador. He moved here several years ago. But he thought they were taught that rich people were bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So if rich people are bad, having money makes me one of those bad rich people.
Exactly, yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, had issues with under-earning, you know, based on that, okay?
Right.
So there's a simple story to say, you know, I will not be a bad person if I am quote-unquote rich.
Okay.
You know, what do I, where did I get that idea from? Why do I think I would have to be a bad person if I'm quote-unquote rich? You know, well, let me think. I could be the kind of wealthy person who shares my money. If I had more money and I was living comfortably, I could use that money to help other people. I can make donations to things. I can support worthy causes. You know, so you can write a different story that's healthier and then live your way into that story by, first of all, removing those blocks. But then it's not also just your thinking, it's what you do. And sometimes we have to break the thinking by first changing the action, which I know sounds crazy. But sometimes we think we're going to take a different action when we feel or think differently. Sometimes you have to take the action first.
Okay.
So, you know, if what you're doing is overspending, let's say, to keep yourself poor.
Right.
Okay, then that is a behavior that you need to change.
Okay.
And sometimes people need help with that. So that kind of brings me to your next question of when do you refer out? Maybe they have tried to, if somebody has tried to do something on their own and they don't seem to be able to do it within a couple tries, I would say that's a good time to enlist the help of somebody else.
Okay.
Now there's another thing that, people don't often know about, which is a 12-step program called Debtors Anonymous. Okay.
Hmm. And what is it called again?
Debtors Anonymous.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So like Alcoholics Anonymous and like Overeaters Anonymous, it helps people who don't have a healthy relationship with money.
Right. Okay.
And that is, so people who are chronic under-earners, people who get into debt, a lot, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because of overspending or other bad decisions. They actually, the reason why this 12-step program exists is because it is addressing that this is not just a habit.
Right.
This is
yeah.
something that is really connected to how you feel.
Right.
You know, and to emotional components and psychological and spiritual.
Right.
So in Debtors Anonymous, they help you to really look at that through the use of the 12 steps, and anybody can look them up, 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're the same steps that are used in every 12-step program, just modified instead of dealing with alcohol, whatever the issue
dealing
is.
With debt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Wow.
So in Debtors Anonymous, it would be I'm powerless over, you know, the first step is admitting that you're powerless and that your life is unmanageable. I'm powerless over my behavior or my thinking around money. And of course, if you're in a debt, your life is unmanageable.
Right, yeah. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
And you can get support also in Debtors Anonymous to make a budget, have financial, you know, a plan so that you don't spend, and you're doing that with the support of other people. And something like DA, Debtors Anonymous, is a completely free, you know, program, just like all of the 12-step programs are.
Okay. Wow. Well, you have shared so much information with us, and I'm so grateful because it was just very enlightening, and it was, you know, as I was listening to you share, it was, you know, I had other questions and I was holding them back because I was like, okay, we only have a certain period of time, so
yeah,
that means that you have to come back.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
So I want to share, or want you to share, a little bit more information about your upcoming book and how women who want to have a more successful life through their work can reach out to you.
Okay. Happy to. Thank you. So the book that's coming out is the second book. It's going to be a trilogy of the story of Princess Isabel of Ixamica, who
okay.
is an adventurous princess. She's not your usual fairy tale princess. And so it's based on the idea of the heroine's quest. So in book one, we meet our heroine. She's in her formative years, so we get to see sort of, you know, her parents and where she grew up and how that contributes to her character. And she has some adventure in book one. She has a romance in book one. Because we know that's something we all deal with in
yes.
life. It's a part
yes.
of the journey. And now in book two, she has gone through, she's had her first major call to adventure, which
okay.
is like the first step in the heroine's quest. So you start off in the safety of the known world, and then you get a call to launch out into the adventure.
Okay.
So
okay.
book one is her first answering of her call to adventure, and that takes her in the journey to Orphalese, where she is going to help to rescue the colony of Orphalese, which belongs to her kingdom of Ixamica. She encounters pirates and battles, and, you know, we have mermaids and a great band of female sailors and
right.
warriors and very exciting characters, and that's in book two. Book three is writing itself.
Okay.
And it's not, you know, it's just starting to form. And they can get that by visiting my website, which is visionquestretreats.com. And book one is currently available. You'll see it in the masthead where it says, The Adventures of Isabel, book one. And you can order a hard copy, or paperback, but you know what I mean, tangible copy, or you can go to Amazon and get it on Kindle, which I highly recommend getting book one before book two. You can read book two without book one, but I highly recommend, and I know there are few copies left in stock on book one. Book two, when it comes out, will be announced on the website as well.
Okay.
And it'll, you know, be in pretty much the same place. So if people want to get the book, they can go there, as well as if they want to be in touch with me, they can certainly do it there at visionquestretreats.com. But perhaps a more interactive place is my Facebook page, which is Vision Quest Retreats with Dr. Nicole Cutts. And we also have online events there, like Facebook Live events and chats dealing with subjects around women's success
okay.
and living visions of success.
Wow. Thank you. This has been a very powerful discussion, and I think that it needs to be, we need to become comfortable talking about some of the things that our society has made uncomfortable, and
yes.
I feel that this discussion was one of those. So thank you so much for joining me today, and I look forward to having you for future discussions.
Same here. My pleasure. It's always fun talking to you.
Yes, same here. So thank you so much again.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.